we get things underway this afternoon, though, by talking a little Major League Baseball with Ted Berg of USA Today. Ted, good afternoon.
Hey, Rich. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on with us. Now, look, I'm planning ahead. My boy is only five, but in about 12, 13 years, because this whole SAT thing has blown up today, but are you still able to write his college application essay for him?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if the price is right, I am available.
I like that. I appreciate your efforts there. And before we talk baseball, I'm disappointed by so much about my own life. The latest disappointment is that I didn't get my hands on your couch.
Oh, I'm so that has been. I mean, it would have been yours for free.
Oh.
I am hesitant to reveal this even still. But if you had, you know, eagle eyes and a pickup truck and found the right street corner in New York City, you could have had it. And instead, it went to whoever swooped off with it like 20 minutes after we left it out there.
Ah, I'm always day late and a dollar short. Well, let's talk a little baseball. Yeah, really terrific piece last week. Not that we didn't know this, but a really great story on how Major League Baseball is absolutely, for lack of a better term, screwing over minor leaguers in spring training.
Yeah, I mean, screwing over is probably the right term. And you know, it's one of these things where it's like, I knew about it. And, you know, talking to my editors, it was like, doesn't it seem kind of wild that these guys don't get paid for spring training? Because, you know, they don't get paid for spring training. And then you dig deeper, and the further you go, the more sort of eye-opening it is, like that. Only guys who have reached Super 2 status will get the per diems in spring training for non-game days if they're non-roster invites. So these, you know, sort of sixth and seventh catchers, the guys I focused on in the piece, are there doing major league work and just really not getting paid until the games start. And then once the games start, only getting paid the per diem. And then once they get sent back to minor league camp, paid only a $25 per diem, even though major league starters come down and work on the minor league side all the time. So it's absurd to me. And you know, the case I laid out, and I think based on the response, I would say pretty comprehensively, because I didn't get a lot of backlash, which is so rare, is that, you know, these guys are, whether or not they play in the major league, they're making the major league team better. And when, you know, the Red Sox top starters go over to the minor league side in the last week of spring training and do sim games there or pitch in the minor league game there because they don't want to see whether it's the Rays or the Yankees or whoever they're going to see in the first few weeks of the season, they are playing with guys making less than minimum wage. And they need great baseball players there to play against. They need to train against and play with guys of incredible skill. And those guys, you know, because of how desperate they are to play Major League Baseball, are just sort of taken advantage of by the sport.
Ted, should fans be concerned that not too far down the road we could see some sort of a labor crisis in the game?
Yeah, absolutely. And not over this. I think that this year's free agency, even after Harper and Machado got their $300 million, Craig Kimbrell's still out there. Dallas Keuchel's still out there. So many guys. Curtis Granderson signed a minor league contract, and you look at Granderson, he's never been bad. There's so many viable major league players saw their markets just sort of crater this year in free agency as all these teams said, well, luxury tax, and, you know, we're building from within. We don't want to spend money in free agency anyway. And it had always been that that's the trade-off, right? That, well, you know, you accept the major league minimum for your first two or three years, and you play for below your value in arbitration because when you get to free agency in baseball, you're going to get a fortune. If that's not the case anymore, then why is a guy like Alex Bregman, who came out and complained a little bit about his situation, why is he going to play for $600,000 this year if he's not going to get that, you know, $100 million, $200 million, $300 million that he's worth in free agency? And now players have reason to be concerned that they won't. And so, you know, I think the MLBPA sort of botched, certainly in retrospect, it looks like they botched the negotiations in the last CBA. It puts them in a rough spot for the next one, and it's still a few years away. But I do think, you know, the labor piece, the time of labor piece in baseball is coming to an end by the end of that deal.
We're talking with Ted Berg here on Downtown. What's been one of the best stories of spring training? Last year we had Ohtani and lots of young talent. Who are some people to keep an eye on that should be fun to watch over these last couple of weeks?
You know, one guy who's I haven't spent a ton of time down in Florida this year for spring training, but one guy who's jumped out just from seeing him on TV and seeing the highlights, this guy Pete Alonso with the Mets, who's a first baseman. He's not a huge prospect. I think first base sort of corner type players get overlooked a little bit now on the big prospect list. He hit 36 home runs in the minors last year, which is no joke. I think that the way guys homer in the major leagues now, 36 doesn't look like that big of a number to us. Guys don't really hit that many home runs in the minor leagues. I think maybe it's because of the ball. You almost expect a power surge when guys come up to the next level. And so the numbers that he put up there and then has continued to put up this spring have been off the charts. And then on top of that, I don't know if you saw the highlight, but he had a collision with Josh Reddick, and thankfully they were both okay. But, man, did Reddick get the worst of that one.
Red Sox coming off the World Series win last year, and it's tough. Nobody's been able to win back-to-back in a couple of decades here. Are the Yankees, based on their offseason moves, better than the Red Sox right now?
I hate to say it, but I think so. And, you know, I should note that I was picking against the Red Sox basically every series last postseason. I just didn't think their bullpen would hold up as well as it did. And they certainly proved me wrong. They basically steamrolled the entire league. So I'm probably wrong again. But, you know, based on the Yankees offseason and how quiet the Red Sox were relatively, I was actually just looking through, you know, planning to make my picks for the season, and I would put the Yankees above the Red Sox right now.
How about this Cubs team that's had some, organizational strife, to say the least, here in the last few months? Will they be as good as they ought to be, or will some of those internal problems catch up with the on-field product?
You know, I don't know how much it'll be the internal problems so much. You know, I don't know that when you go out to play, you know, if you're trying to hit 100-mile-an-hour fastball, how much you care about, you know, what the owner has said and done on the day-to-day. But I think how inactive they were this offseason, especially given that everyone thought they were going to be a player for Bryce Harper, and then they just really weren't at all. And this was a club that was supposed to be a dynasty. Obviously, they won the World Series. It's a big deal. They ended the curse. But I think when they won that World Series in 2016, everybody said, okay, well they're going to get back there because look at this young core of players they have. All of a sudden, those guys are getting expensive. Those pitchers are getting kind of old. And meanwhile, all around them, that division just got so much better this year. The Cardinals added Paul Goldschmidt. The Pirates aren't even throwing it in. And then the Reds are this sort of rare basement-dwelling team that went for it this year and at least added a bunch of players to get better. The way that division looks, it's a tougher road for the Cubs. And so, you know, where we could pencil them in atop the NL Central the last few years, I think this year the Cardinals have a little bit deeper roster. The Brewers have a great team as well. And it just looks like it's going to be, you know, start to finish sort of a dogfight there.
We had in the American League last year so many have-nots and teams that didn't even appear to be trying to compete. Will there be somebody that surprises this year? Or have teams just given up on that and said, nope, we'll rebuild, we'll stink, we'll follow the Astros' path, and we'll see in 5 years when we're good again?
I think that it's that. I'm sorry to say it. You know, I think that the AL especially, like, it's funny because, and it was the same way last year, where there were so many teams in the mix for the NL wildcard spots, and just the AL seemed like the postseason teams were kind of settled for such a long time. I just, you know, it's contenders and not even pretenders, I guess, in the American League. I could see the Blue Jays being better than people expected. I think they've just got so many of their prospects right at or near the major league level right now. So they'll probably be better than their record last year. But then, you know, the Mariners are obviously going to take a step back. I don't know that the Angels did enough to move forward and capitalize on Trout. And so, you know, you've got these sort of five or six contending teams. You kind of know four of them are going to wind up in the postseason. It's just a matter of guessing which ones at this point.
Last week, I enjoyed your Ask Me Anything on Reddit. That was great. And somebody asked you on there about this experiment that's going on in the Atlantic League this season. Is there anything in that that you like?
I like shortening the breaks between innings. I think most baseball fans would. I think cable networks won't love that one so much. But, from the fan experience, obviously you want, more baseball and less commercial break. I'm okay with the trying out. One of the things they're going to do is force relievers entering the game to face a minimum of three batters or until the end of the inning to sort of try to stave off these endless mid-inning pitching changes we see now, especially during the postseason. And, I don't know if that's the cynical sports writer in me that is eager to see that change, or if it's just, from a pure fan perspective, it's sort of boring and annoying that every time there's an out in the middle innings of a postseason game, then the manager's walking back out there to switch pitchers. But I like that one. I'm okay with the computer generated balls and strikes, which I think you need to see in practice to see how it works out. My understanding had been for a long time that technology wasn't there, but I think that technology has gotten so much better that if they can do it now, they should absolutely do it at every level. There's no reason not to get it perfect. And then the wacky ones to me are moving the mound back by 2 feet. they had talked about that. And in my head, it's old baseball, a game of such small margins. I figured, okay, maybe you try moving the mound back 6 inches. I got to feel like 2 feet is a huge adjustment. These guys have been pitching from 60 feet, 6 inches since they're 14 years old or something. And now you gotta work on it. They're doing it halfway through the season. So, you're throwing your curveball one way until, I don't know, middle of July or whenever the Atlantic League All-Star break is. And then, now all of a sudden you need to rework all of your pitches for 2 extra feet. It's wild. I'm plotting right now to go out to some Atlantic League games this season. So if that league's goal is to get more attention, they've got mine. But I hate the banning the shift thing. I'm all for the experiments. I think this mound thing is going to be a wild one to watch. I hope for the pitcher's sake that everyone, it doesn't turn out to be that those extra 2 feet are like the breaking point for arm health and all these guys get hurt.
I now have to tell you, the lure of having your work show up in my inbox was enough to get me to sign up for the For the Win newsletter. Has that been the story nationwide? People getting signed up, really not caring so much about the news or what's happening in the world or even elsewhere in sports, give me some Ted Berg.
I hope so. I wish there were more out there like you, Rich, but I hope that's the case. People, it's gotten pretty good response so far. I am it's good to get it because I'm waking up at 5 a.m. to get it done. And so it's nice to feel validated when people say they like it or laugh about a joke I made in there. It's definitely a personally voiced newsletter. It's not straight news, so I hope that people come for the TED.
Well, they should. I mean, right thinking people have already been there. The rest will come aboard eventually because I expect global domination is in your future.
That is absolutely my goal.
Ted Berg, I always love talking with you. Thanks for checking in with us this afternoon. We look forward to visiting with you throughout the baseball season.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.